Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on Saturday, July 20th, 2013, the 44th anniversary of man walking on the moon. This is episode... Nothing so momentous here. This is episode 997. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And by ShareFile. Enhance your workflow. Send files of almost any size easily and securely with ShareFile from Citrix. Try ShareFile today for a 30-day free trial. Visit ShareFile.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Tech Guy. And this is why I don't get here early. Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. It's time to talk about computers, the internet, home theater, cell phones, all that jazz. Usually I get here, what do you think, Heather, about 30 seconds before the theme begins?
Yeah. The earliest you've been here is like 2 minutes ago.
2 minutes. So I've been here for half an hour, and as a result, I'm completely unprepared. Because I've had all the time in the world to sit here and think about the show. Whereas if it's 30 seconds, I know I've got to speak in 30 seconds.
I'm sorry. Did I ask you too many stupid questions?
No. I would have played Simpsons Tapped Out or something.
Oh, okay.
This is why they call me Last Minute Leo. Hello, everybody. The show is a chance for you to ask your questions, for us to talk about what's been going on in the world of tech, to kind of keep up in plain English on what's new in the world. And that's I enjoy it because I get to keep up, too, as part of doing the show. And I know a lot of you have questions about, you know, what phone to get, what computer to get. Is Windows 8 great or should I wait for 8.1? That kind of thing. I kind of knew this, but it's now confirmed that Motorola will be revealing a new phone. Their first phone is a Google company. Technically not their first phone as a Google company, but the first phone that really reflects Google's influence on them. Everything up to now, in fact, including some phones that they're expected to release next week, the Motorola Droid phones, were designed before Google bought Motorola. The Moto X is what this phone will be called, and they're sending out invitations to an event in New York City on August 1st. Come experience the new Motorola. There have been a lot of leaks about the Moto X, including, and I think we know this for a fact, that it will be made in the United States. It'll be the first cell phone, I believe, the first cell phone you can buy, smartphone that you can buy, made in the U.S. of A. One of the advantages that they gain by that, I believe, is customization. You know, everybody's been talking about the fact that this will be a highly customizable phone. And, of course, if you're making the phone in China... it takes some time to get the thing over here. Actually, with modern overnight shipping and so forth, I guess it's not really time. It's more money, isn't it? But if you make it in Texas, Motorola has bought a big plant in Fort Worth, I think it is. And if you make it in Texas, then you can say, hey, we can customize this. We can modify it. And we can get it right to you. It also has some other advantages. For one thing, Apple is asking the International Trade Commission to stop all Motorola phones at the border. Motorola lost a patent lawsuit to Apple, and the ITC has not been enforcing the ban. And Apple's hopping mad. They said, you had secret talks with Google, at which point you decided to let that phone in. Hey, the judge said, we won. You're supposed to ban Motorola phones from entering the United States. So there's no resolution yet on this, it is completely possible that'll happen, and this is one way to hedge your bets. Well, what if we make it in the United States? So you got two advantages. You can customize it, you can get it to the customer quickly, and you can't be blocked by the International Trade Commission. Rumors are the Moto X will have some interesting googly features. One rumor says, in fact, we saw a video, which kind of, to me, confirms the rumor. It was a video professionally made, purported to be by the Canadian company Rogers, which I think if you look at it, it's sometimes these things are fake, but this is a pretty realistic-looking video, a sales and training video from Rogers. That implies that the Moto X will always be listening. And that's interesting, isn't it? So that you can say, hey, Moto X, what's the weather out? Or what's my commute time? And it'll tie in, I gathered, looking at the video to Google Now. So you'll be able to get those. You know, Google knows a lot about you. This is another thing I'm surprised people aren't kind of more creeped out by. Google, looking at your Gmail, knows, for instance, that you've got travel plans. In fact, when you get the confirmation from the airline, Google makes a little card, pops up when you get to the airport, even shows you the QR code if you request that from the airline for your check-in. And it's on your phone before you ask for it. And now you could talk to the phone. But I wonder how people are going to react to the idea that something in your pocket is always listening to you. Ooh. Now, what we'll have to wait and see, but what I would bet is it may always be listening, but it's not always sending that data back to Google, that it's listening for a certain keyword, I would guess. Otherwise, it would be too much data being sent to back and forth. But it's always listening for a keyword. And when it hears that keyword, whatever it is, okay, Google or okay, Moto X, then it sits up, takes notice, records what you say, sends it back to the servers, that kind of thing. I would guess. But there's no reason it couldn't also be listening to other keywords, bomb or whatever. Anyway, we'll find out August 1st. So now we know that there's a new phone from Google/Motorola coming out in August. And we pretty much expect that Apple will announce a new phone in September or October. And it's been hard enough to decide between the Galaxy S4 and the HTC One. There's great choices out there. You'll never hear me knock choice. I know it can be confusing. And hard to decide. Some people will just say, just tell me what to buy. And that's what I'm here for. You just call me and I'll tell you what to buy. Although, I think in the long run for people, choice is good. Now, here's one choice I don't recommend. You've seen T-Mobile has initiated their new Jump program. All four of the cell phone companies in the United States have suddenly realized that there are certain people, not all of us, but I'll include myself and maybe you too, who don't want to wait 2 years between phones. The phones are getting better faster and faster, and 2 years it seems like too long to wait. So every 6 months with this Jump plan at T-Mobile, you can upgrade your phone without incurring any additional fee. As long as you continue to pay the monthly fee, you hand in the old phone, and you get and you can choose a new phone. As soon as T-Mobile announced that, Verizon and AT&T said, yeah, we got this. yeah. AT&T said, our program's called Next. Apparently, you have to make the program be one word. T-Mobile, Jump, AT&T, Next, and Verizon, Edge. Those are the three upgrade plans. And based on simple math, which apparently nobody at those companies can do, or maybe they can, but they don't think you can do. They don't think consumers can do. The total cost of these plans is just not worth it. Just not worth it. Because in many cases, you have to pay additional monthly fees. The Jump program, for instance, costs $10 extra a month. Now, that's insurance, too. So if you break the phone, you can get a new phone. The Jump plan, the initial cost of the device is $150. You pay $20 a month for the device, $10 a month for the Jump fee, and then whatever monthly fees for service. So if you got a new device every 6 months, it would cost you $1,013. AT&T Next, a new device every year, $768. Verizon Edge, New device every year, $649. New device every 6 months, $1,299. Basically, these are premium prices. You pay more for the privilege of getting a new phone every 6 months. What a surprise. In fact, in some cases, a lot more. You'd almost be better off just buying an unlocked phone and signing up for service. Almost. So just a word of warning. Don't jump at these plans. Hey, let's go to the phones. What do you say? 8888-ASK-LEO. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I apologize. It wasn't Apple that complained to the International Trade Commission about Motorola's phones. It was Microsoft. Now, the problem is everybody's suing everybody else. So Microsoft says U.S. Customs refused to block Motorola's smartphones after the ITC order and, in fact, went to Google and had private conversations with the Goog. The International Trade Commission ruled last May that the devices, all Motorola smartphones, infringed a 1998 patent held by Microsoft. Who knew? That's right. I remember this. Involving syncing contact information and email addresses across PCs and mobile devices. Microsoft says, we own that. No phone can sync with a PC. Apparently, many other Android manufacturers do have a licensing agreement with Microsoft. So, I've yet to see a phone banned, right? I mean, I take it back. We have seen phones banned. I've yet to see it actually enforced. You know, Apple phones have been banned in some countries. Android phones have been banned in other countries. U.S. apparently banned Motorola phones. But wouldn't that be a big deal if all of a sudden you couldn't get a Droid because, sorry, not allowed in the U.S.? Oh, well. 8888-ASK-LEO. Anyway, I correct my... I want to thank you, chat room. I was stand corrected. It's Microsoft, not Apple, that had that ban. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website is techguylabs.com. Heather Homan, our call screener. Hello, Heather.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have a call for me?
Yes, I do. Pat is on about just what you're talking about.
Well, let's say hello, Pat, in Billings, Montana. Hello, Pat. Oh, wait a minute, Pat, I got to do... No, it's my fault. I pressed the wrong button. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing good. Say, you know, these big Verizon, AT&T, and all this and that, we've been with Verizon for 100 years. We had a fag phone with them.
No, really? The over-the-shoulder one?
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
That's impressive. You were early adopters.
It kind of came with a vehicle we bought.
Wow. What kind of vehicle comes with a bag phone?
Well, at the time, it was a 92 Suburban.
Wow. That's because it's such a big car, you had to be able to call the people in the back seat with the phone.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Hey, are you all right back there?
We thought we were really cool back then.
Oh, yeah. That's living large.
Yeah, it was. But now... we're trying to get away from all that. We're tired of contracts.
Yeah.
We have four phones, and it's getting so darn expensive. You know,
it's
like $200 a month, and only one of them is a smartphone.
Wow. You're overpaying.
So, anyway, I have actually switched to Straight Talk. You know, we're going one phone at a time to try it.
Yeah, that's sold at Walgreens. It's the same. It's really from the same companies. That, you know, Sprint and T-Mobile and AT&T that you've been used to. I don't know if Verizon does a Straight Talk phone.
Well, this Straight Talk phone that I have claims they function on Verizon towers. And I'm in Montana now, and I travel all over the country, and it's been pretty good.
Yeah. Really, these are, and there are a lot of these, Virgin Mobile. One of our advertisers is Ting. These are MVNO, mobile virtual network operators. They take existing, it's a lot of money to put in cell towers. You'd be kind of nuts to start a cell phone company today and say, yeah, we're going to get rights of way all over the country, put in cell towers. That ship has sailed. So what they do is they take existing infrastructure and they resell it. And that Straight Talk does that. And, you know, so if you're getting a Straight Talk phone on the Verizon network, it will work exactly as your Verizon phone did. Now, Straight Talk does some funny things. I think maybe a little bit misrepresenting it, because it starts off very low cost, but there's lots of fine print. But if you use more than a certain amount, you know, it suddenly goes up.
Right. Yeah, well, we found out it's not totally unlimited, but it's more than what I
yeah, well, that's the point. Is it that's exactly the point. If it works for you, then it's a good deal.
Yeah. Now, this phone I got is an LG.
Well, that's the other thing, that they don't necessarily have the latest, greatest phones.
Well, that's what I was wondering. Is this phone somewhat less of an LG, even though it has the name on it? Or?
Well, LG makes all kinds. What's the model?
Optimus, I think.
Yeah, no, those are good. The LG Optimus phones are actually quite good phones. It might be an older Optimus rather than a newer Optimus and so forth. But, you know, if it's fine, if it does everything, you don't feel like you have to keep up with the Joneses just because you had a cell phone back in the early days. You don't have to be the latest, greatest. So I'm looking. They have Galaxy S3 here in my area. They have iPhone 4s, not iPhone 5s. Galaxy S3, not S4. Oh, they do have iPhone 5s if you're willing to pay for it. They have also some very low cost, like the Huawei phones, which are made in China, the BlackBerry right. Curve, Optimus, Showtime, which might be the one you have, or Quest. Which Optimus do you have?
I think it's Showtime.
Yeah. So here's the difference. It's a 4.3-inch screen, a little smaller screen than some of the more state-of-the-art phones. The biggest difference I see is that it's Android 4.0. Current version of Android is 4.2.2. So it's a little bit older. You know, it's a 5-megapixel camera. You know, that's – but, again, it's all what you need, right?
Right.
So if this – it's not the – I'll tell you right now. It's not the latest, greatest smartphone. It's the latest, greatest smartphone from a year ago. Or a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Well, you talk about these new phones, and it's like, oh, my gosh, I don't think I need a phone that talks to me.
Right. Yeah. Or listens all the time in my pocket. Yeah.
Oh, that's
right.
Kind of creepy.
Right. Yeah, I'm really interested to see if this is true. These are just rumors because we don't know the details
yet.
But if I'm very interested to see if this is the case and how people will react to it. You know,
yeah.
I believe it because Google wants to do this with your computer, too. You know, they demonstrated a feature, whether you have Chrome browser running, of you just say, hey, I think it's, you say, okay, Google, what's the weather outside like? And it will talk to you. So on the one hand, it's kind of cool because it's like HAL 9000 and 2001 A Space Odyssey. It's a computer that hears you and understands and responds. And isn't that what we wanted, or at least we said we wanted? On the other hand, now, especially in light of the revelations about the government spying on us, maybe there's a little sensitivity to that now. I don't know.
Well, maybe I'm dating myself, but I can remember back, I must have been in high school, we would talk about, the days are going to come when you can actually see the person you're talking to.
Yeah. No, no.
And we're like, no, that'll never happen. And oh, my gosh, here it is, you know?
You want to date yourself. I remember going to the 1964 World's Fair in New York City, and AT&T showed a picture phone. And said, yes, soon everybody will be doing that. And I thought, ha ha.
Yeah.
Maybe that would be. I don't know what I thought. I probably thought it was cool. And then remember again in 2001 A Space Odyssey, they had that exact thing. Guy's on the moon or on his way to the moon. He talks to his little girl. It seems so science fiction-y. And now we got it. And not only do we have it at home on our computer, we've got it on your smartphone. So, you know, if you like it, if it's doing what you want and the price is right, don't feel like you have to be keeping up with the Joneses, or Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's Scott Wilkinson, the home theater guy. Feeling better, Scott? Your voice sounds much better.
Much better this week, thank
good,
you, yes.
Good.
I'm still coughing a little bit. This is a thing that hangs on for months.
I know. I had it before. Yep.
Yeah.
So Scott is our home theater guru. He is the editorial director at the AVS Forum, avsforum.com, and does our Home Theater Geeks podcast every Monday on the Twit Network, twit.tv/HTG for Home Theater Geeks. And each week he joins us on the show to talk a little bit about home theater, because nowadays home theater is high tech.
Seriously high tech.
Well, I knew that. I realized that when I got my Pioneer 5060 some time ago. My HD TV was about 5 years old now. And it had in the more than that. And it had in the back of it the Linux GPL, the license for the Linux operating system. And I said, wait a minute. You're telling me this TV's running the Linux operating system? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is.
In fact, a lot of home theater electronics run the Linux operating system because, of course, it's free.
Yeah. And it works well on low-powered chips. It works on a variety of chips. You don't have to have an Intel Core Duo in there or whatever.
Right.
So what
right.
should we talk about today, Scotty?
Well, you know what? I get a bunch of questions, and this week I got a question from the TWIT offices themselves. One of your gals, actually, Frederique.
How do we get rid of that Leo guy? Oh, no.
No. Okay. She wrote me and said, we got a new 60-inch TV, and the sound isn't very good. And we want better sound, but we want it to be unobtrusive. We don't want to, you know, have a bunch of speakers all over the place.
I think that's a universal question.
It is. So many people ask me this question. And fortunately, I have a really great answer. At least starting at the end of next month, there will be a new sound bar coming from Pioneer. Now, you've heard me talk about Pioneer speakers. Designed by this fellow by the name of Andrew Jones.
Right.
Who is a remarkable speaker designer, and he has made a set of speakers for Pioneer that are so, so beyond what they cost. They perform so much better than what than their weight class and their price class that it's not even funny. And at the end of August, they're going to be coming out with a sound bar.
They haven't made a sound bar in 13 years.
That's right.
15 years. Been 15 a long years. Time. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And here comes the first sound bar from Pioneer in 15 years. Again, now designed by Andrew Jones.
Oh. Now, sound bars are nice because they're small. They fit right into the TV. They look like the TV's own built-in speakers. But I always wonder how much of a surround sound experience am I going to get with the little speakers right under the TV? I mean.
Well, you're not. You're not going to get much of a surround experience. Okay. Now, there are sound bars that purport to give you a surround experience by simulating it, either by bouncing sound waves off your sidewalls or doing all kinds of weird DSP, digital signal processing, with phase and stuff like that. And some of them work better than others at this. Yamaha, in particular, is pretty good at it. And they've been doing it longer than anybody else. And even their early attempts were pretty good.
So is this doing that?
No, this is not. It's Andrew Jones is concerned with quality.
Yeah.
At a good value.
And is so there a subwoofer with this? Because that's the other issue.
Yes, there is a subwoofer.
Because these are smaller speakers that aren't going to be able to give you that big, deep bass.
Correct.
But
correct.
If you have a subwoofer plus a soundbar, I think then you might have some pretty decent stereo sound.
Correct. You have really, and in this case, you have really good stereo sound. I actually heard this thing a couple of times, and it's amazing.
How much is this going to be?
$400.
What? Including the sub? No.
Including the subwoofer.
Oh, wow. That sounds really like something to look at.
Yep. Now, it's a small subwoofer, which actually is good. It's only an 8-inch driver in this subwoofer, and you'd think, that's going to be wimpy bass. But I actually heard it again, and it's quite remarkable. You know, it's not the end-all and be-all of bass, but for someone who wants to improve the sound of the TV's internal speakers, which isn't very hard to do because they're usually really lousy.
They know. They just put those in as just so, hey, if you don't have anything else, I guess you could use these.
Exactly, exactly. But
six speakers in the sound bar. It looks like a tweeter and two mid-range speakers
each
on left
one,
and right.
Each one has its own amplifier.
Oh, that's nice.
And
nice wooden case, too, which is good. Wood is good for resonating.
Exactly. And in fact, it's a curved wooden case, which improves the internal resonance characteristics. Now, it's not small. It's not the thinnest, smallest sound bar you can get, but that's fine
with
me.
It goes under the TV, and you don't have wires running around the room. You don't have rear speakers.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. It's meant for a system where if you've got a Blu-ray player and a Roku box or a cable box, couple of things connected directly to the TV, then the TV's audio output goes to this soundbar. And the subwoofer is wireless, and you just pair it up once. You can put it anywhere in the room that you have a power outlet. It needs a power outlet.
I think I need to buy that. It also, I notice, has hooks so you can hang it on the wall above the TV if the TV's up against the wall.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the main point here is $400. You know, is not exactly cheap, but it's really pretty good for what
you're getting.
It is.
Yeah.
And the sound quality, I can attest from personal experience, is really, really good.
So be out next month. Don't run to the store today. The SPSB23W speaker bar. But you know what? You don't need the numbers because there's only one from Pioneer. That's it.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
Wow.
So it's really, really good. And that's what I recommended to Frederic.
All right.
And also, Brad Z wrote me and asked me the same question. You know,
this is a popular question.
Putting together a little theater. He doesn't want surround sound speakers. A lot of people don't want those surround speakers.
I can tell you, I bought a Bose sound bar for $2,500. Sounds fine. It's got a subwoofer. It's got a central unit with a unified remote. So you get some extra features. But it's not sound you would run. It's not as good as my 5.1 surround system, you know, from Edimotix.
Right.
So, at that price, $400, you sounds like you're getting a hell of a deal. That sounds.
You really are. Yeah, I can't recommend it highly enough. Now I'm going to undoubtedly get one in and to review and spend more time with it than I have already. But everything I've read so far and heard so far about that, and also about the other Pioneer speakers, is just amazing.
Emotiva, not Edimotix. I said the wrong.
Yeah. Edimotix makes really nice in-ear monitors.
Yeah, I use those earbuds,
right?
IEMs. But right. Emotiva. I have an Emotiva speaker system with a Onkyo AV receiver, which cost total less than $1,500, and it sounds much better.
Yeah.
than a $2,500.
Yeah. Well, that's
sound
true.
Soundbar from Bose.
You know, if you're going to want to go with a real sound surround system, a receiver and a set of speakers,
sounds so good.
The Emotiva with an Onkyo or something like that would be good. The Pioneer Andrew Jones speakers.
That's a good deal.
With a Pioneer, with a receiver, either a Pioneer or something else.
Are they still making those? Or
oh yeah,
oh they
yeah.
are. Okay.
Oh yeah, you can get a whole system there for around $1,000, and that's going to be a killer system. I mean, it's not going to be, you know, the same as a $10,000 system, but it's going to be plenty, plenty good. Really good for the vast majority of people. So,
well, who's your guest on Monday on the Home Theater Geeks show?
Oh, interesting. Fred Kitson, the chief technical officer of DTS.
Oh, that should be fun. They're the ones who did that that new Z Plus sound, right?
Correct. Actually called Headphone X.
I mean, we played it a little bit on here for people listening in stereo and... even down the wire, it's on streaming video, it sounded good. People liked it.
Yeah.
That absolutely. Should be fun. Okay.
So I'm really looking forward to that. Yeah. Headphone X, up to 11.1 channels simulation in normal headphones.
Wow. Somebody's asking about the Sonos soundbar. Sonos also makes a soundbar, and you can buy a separate subwoofer, but you're talking $1,200 for that combined system.
Yep.
And you get some additional features, Sonos features.
True.
But boy, $400 for this, I'm gonna get one. For my home gym, home theater system, so I can watch Arnold while I work out. Thank you, Scotty.
You bet.
Wah, 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 wah. That's my sound system. I get it on and I bang a gong. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Is that T-Rex? Wow.
Yes.
Get it on, bang a gong. But we listen. The music was different in those days. I don't know if good or bad, but different. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. Outside the U.S., use Skype to give us a jingle. Bob in Manhattan Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Bob.
Yes, Leo. How are you?
I'm great. Welcome. What can I do for you?
Okay, question. After those steroids, is your batting average gone?
He's taking the steroids, not me. No, you know, they say it doesn't help your batting average at all, but your nose grows, so.
Debunk up somewhere. Wrong place. Okay, my question. PC Mover by Laplink. Are you familiar with it?
Golly, I haven't heard about that in ages. Laplink's still in business, huh? Wow.
Yeah, I've got an XP, and I want to put it on a new computer. And
I'm surprised to hear about it, and yes, they are still selling this, is that Windows comes with the transfer and migration wizard that does all of this for you. Laplink, go ahead, we're taking us back a few years. They used to sell a special parallel cable that would allow you to take two versions of Windows, move one to the other. Now, I just went to their website, laplink.com, and it says data connection error. So I wonder if they're still around, or maybe we just sent too many people to their website. I don't know.
Well, I got a $40 whatever it was here that I may be taking back, man, huh?
I don't think you...
I don't need it.
I don't think you need it. You needed it in the old days, you needed it. But I think nowadays, you know, Windows has a migration assistant, but I don't even recommend using that, frankly. In general, I think it's best you get a new computer, update the computer, put your apps on it. Moving the apps is a bad idea anyway, especially if you're moving from XP to Windows. What are you moving to, Windows 7, Windows 8?
Yeah, it'd be 8, and I've got... what have I got now? It's prior to 7. What was it?
XP, you said.
XP, yeah, I had it.
Yeah. So Windows 8 has all this, you know, migration software you need. It's very easy. The Windows Easy Transfer Wizard. I would not move the settings, frankly. Your data, you can use it to move. It does simplify things.
Well, will that move my programs? Like, I've got some programs that they still work, but they don't make it anymore.
Ah, that's an interesting problem. Well, and they may not run on Windows 8. If the company's out of business, then they may not have updated it to run with Windows 8. And so you may have other issues. Yeah. So the easy
and if I've got the bad critters on my old one, if I transfer that over, it'll infect the new computer too, right?
Probably not, but let's not take a chance. If you think that is the case, then we really don't want to do Laplink. Why take that chance?
What's the best way of cleaning up and knowing the computer's clear?
Reinstalling Windows. I think you're due. So let's get a new computer. And let's not connect the old computer to the new computer. But what you're going to want to do is make a backup of your data on the old XP computer anyway. You want a backup, right? So yeah. And I would send back a Laplink for a few bucks more. You can get an external hard drive or probably even... one of these USB 64 or 32 gig USB keys, probably enough. I bet you had a 2 gig hard drive in that XP, so you don't need a lot of storage. So get a little thumb drive, copy just your data over, you know, the My Documents folder, the My Music, My Photos, whatever, your personal data to that USB key. Now it's a backup. You can copy it from that USB key, and this you can do safely, by the way, to the new computer. Now you've got all your data. Your apps are going to be another hit or miss situation. If the company's out of business, chances of it working on Windows 8 are pretty low.
Okay. Yeah. There's a couple of apps I had. I had a shredder before, and I bought a program to do that on the new one too. It's Drive Genius.
Yeah, if you want to, that's a simple thing. Permanent deletion of files. Just get a new updated one that works with Windows 8.
Okay, because this Genius 3 that will shred along with a whole bunch of other things I don't know or care about.
There's plenty of free things. You know, I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't spend money on a file shredder. You're just looking for free secure delete programs. There's lots of those.
Okay, I'm old and technically stupid.
Yeah, and you want to take the easy path, and I understand that. And so that's fine. I can point you to, we'll put on the show notes, SysInternals, which is a Microsoft division, has a file shredder that's free from Microsoft, so you know it's good. That's a secure delete. It's called if you Google S delete for secure delete, S delete, and that way that's nice because it's Windows 8 compliant. It will make sure that it not only permanently deletes the file, but goes and looks in places like virtual memory. So if you're really looking for a secure deletion program, that this is much better than the one you just bought or are thinking about buying.
Yeah. Well, yes. I bought them both.
Yeah, bring them back. I'd bring them both back. S-Delete is good, and it's free from Microsoft. Okay?
Okay.
And it's better. It's frankly better because it understands how Windows works. There are other places that it did, that some of this data can live on, like the swap file, the virtual memory. So you want to really make sure you get it. This is just Google S-Delete, and you'll find it. It's very fast, easy. It's free.
Google F as in Foxtrot.
No, S as in secure.
Oh, S. Sierra.
S-Delete. Sierra Delete.
Okay. That does it, I guess. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I think always best, even in the days when Laplink worked, like if you're going from Windows 95 to Windows 98, that's the era Laplink's from. It was even then, it was better just to not do this, but to manually move stuff over. You know, here, you take settings from Windows XP and you move them to Windows 8, that's guaranteed failure. That's just guaranteed to be a problem. Guaranteed to be a problem. So just get your data. It's an opportunity to back it up anyway. A USB key or USB drive, you probably don't have more than a gig of data total. So you could put it on a USB key. These USB keys for $10, you can get one big enough to do that. And now you've got a backup, which you can keep around, right? That's good. Keep backing up to that. And carry it on your keychain. I have on my keychain, I have a 64 gig USB key on my keychain. That's really handy, especially when the valets come to get your car and you know, you give them the keys and they can just take any, you know, all my stuff's on there. It's very easy for them to steal all my music, my photos. Really simple. You want to make it easy. Actually, I take the key. That's why I take the key off the keychain when I valet park. And it's always best to start with a fresh install of Windows. Not why junk it up with stuff that you had on XP. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And it's time to talk about computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the phone number, 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S., outside the U.S., you can call us still. Just use Skype or one of them voice over internet thingamajigs, and it won't cost you anything since it's a toll-free number in the U.S. 888-827-5536. Let's see. Our website, techguylabs.com. That's where we'll put links to the stuff that I mentioned, like S-Delete and so forth, so that you can get it for yourself. Techguylabs.com. I'll also give you a link to our chat room, which is a lot of fun. All the people in there having a great time. And they're kind of my brains. So when I say something wrong, they fix it. They correct it, and then I could fix it. Heather Hammond is our call screener. Hello, HH. H-Bomb in the chat room.
Yes.
What caller should I go to? What are you laughing for?
Well, because we were doing some funny hijinks behind the
scenes. Oh, behind the scenes hijinks, hey.
Brendan in Upland is kind of talking about similar stuff.
Ah.
I think. Maybe I'm wrong.
Well, we'll see. Hey, Brendan, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Brendan. Welcome.
Hey, Brendan, Leo Laporte.
Oh, he's listening to the radio. Hey, what's up?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was listening to the delay.
Yeah, that's all right. I love the delay. Actually, you're listening to the internet because the radio delay is 40 seconds.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
What can I do for you?
So, actually, what I'm doing is I'm working with the Oculus Rift, and I'm building an augmented reality device for my to get to the International Science Fair.
How cool! And are you a high school student?
Yes, I'm an incoming junior.
So, the Oculus Rift is very interesting. The developer kit was a Kickstarter project, and
yeah.
I have mine. They've shipped them out. It's a virtual reality headset, and you know, these have been around for 20 years. I remember playing with a similar visor-based virtual reality headset at the SIGGRAPH conference in 1992 or 93. But they have come a long way thanks to the power of microcomputers. You could put this visor on your head, and as you turn your head, man, the world turns with you, and it's It's kind of a very realistic experience. And I love the idea that you were able to get one. And now you can do something that was part of the science fair. So what do you want to do?
So what I'm looking to do is, it's actually a lot in detail. It's listed on my site, brennangeary.com. But in just kind of the nutshell version, it's basically, imagine kind of an instructional video type thing. So you mount two cameras, one for each eye on the front face of the Oculus.
Yeah.
And if you're able to superimpose something to where, okay, highlight these four screws, take off this cover. So say you type in, I have this error and this error, and it'd be able to walk you through on disassembling a piece of hardware and being able to go and troubleshoot a little bit with actual physical visual representations of what you're supposed to do. So it could turn, I mean, I always thought, my first thought was in a military application. So, I mean, if your mechanic gets shot and dies, you're stuck and your tank or whatever breaks down, you could turn any one soldier or anything into a mechanic. You don't really need to be trained in this. You could just put on a pair of goggles and be able to do whatever you need to do and fix whatever you need to.
What a great idea. So one eye is seeing the real world. The other eye is seeing the manual or the training. And if you don't have to lose your mechanic for this. I mean, you could be learning how to fix a car that you've never fixed before. All sorts of useful things.
Yeah.
That's great. What a great idea.
I mean, being able to have two images, I mean, that's really the beauty of the Oculus is it has just such a large screen compared to all of the other virtual reality devices. And being able to do that, you'd be able to see a 3D image. So you could see a wrench or whatever on whatever nut or bolt you need to remove or reconnect. And basically what my question is I'm kind of over my head on this project.
I mean, well, you're over my head, too. I'm not sure I can help you. Go ahead. What is it that you need?
I'm just looking. I mean, well, I've kind of started to look into it, and you're looking for, like, things like object detection or things of that nature, to where you'd be able to point a camera and just image processing, being able to point a camera.
And
be able to detect that. I mean, I've looked into things like MATLAB, or I was looking for possible...
Doing this is non-trivial. Google Goggles, which is a program that Google offers on Android, does... Actually, I think it's on iOS, too, does this. You could take a picture of the Eiffel Tower. It will then do the image recognition and then say, oh, that's the Eiffel Tower. Here's information about the Eiffel Tower. It's difficult, and it's certainly not something you could develop on your own, I don't think. In fact, Google didn't even develop it on their own. They licensed technology from a Toronto company that was doing the image recognition. So, you know, this is not an easy thing. Now, I'm wondering maybe if you could maybe get a student license for the image recognition technology.
What you're thinking about is something to where it would be able to recognize every object to the point. But what I'm thinking is a box, and it has those in there.
That's true for speech recognition. If you have a constrained vocabulary, in the case of image recognition, if you had only 300 parts, you wouldn't have such a difficult job recognizing an individual part. You're right.
I mean, at the science fair, they don't expect you to have a finished product. So I'm thinking I build something.
That would be pretty impressive,
Just for this.
Wow.
Just to kind of show something similar.
So here's what you need to do. You need to figure out some way to take what the camera is seeing and match it up to a picture in a database, right? Obviously, you have to take out things that are unique to the image, unique to the camera image, maybe the way the lighting works, or color. You might want to remove color. There certainly is a lot of information out there if you search for image recognition. When I look at what they do, they almost always take some sort of odd scan and that looks like kind of sort of like an image, but is really the basic fundamental pieces of the image and compare those. But boy, I do not know how you would do this. Web4833 in the chat room says you might want to go to the Oculus Rift subreddit. There are a lot of people there. That would certainly help you make it work with the Rift. But I understand what you're asking for is the fundamental technology behind image recognition.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the stuff I'm working on, that's like exactly what I'm trying to... I mean, I'm all...
I'll tell you what Google bought. You can maybe look and see if they've published any of the research. Google bought a company, Toronto company called DNN Research. And that's what they used in their Google goggles, DNN Research. It was a Toronto, I think University of Toronto, a company. So it was, you know, it was university research. And that's what they incorporated into Google goggles and Google Plus photo search as well. So it was face recognition as well.
And another thing I've looked into is a C++ library called OpenCV. And I was just, what I was really looking for is maybe, I mean, you knew of someone or someone in the listening would be able to help me out to the point where, I don't know, we could email back and forth to the point, because I'm mainly hardware. I mean, I can go to town on a piece of hardware, but so software, I'm looking at all this, these complex algorithms and just kind of freaking out a little bit.
What DNN, it's very complex. What DNN Research did is something called a neural network, which is a learning machine. In fact, I've seen some very interesting research done on image recognition using neural networks. What you do is you let the computer learn. So you show the computer lots of images of a gear and let it figure out what the abstract is of the gear on its own. But it takes a lot of work and a lot of time. I don't know where to point you. I do think that the Oculus Rift subreddit is the place to start. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I love it when you talk to kids like Brendan, high school junior, hardware wizard. He got the Oculus Rift, which was by itself is very cool. I mean, this was a Kickstarter project. That means they raised money from the public, including me. I kicked in some money to design this virtual reality headset. Now he's got the developer edition, and he says, what can we do with it? Oh, is that cool? There must be something we could do with it, which makes me think, you know, I've got this developer edition. I'm never going to do anything. I think I'm going to donate this to a local high school. Say, hey, you know, this would be a good thing for you guys to work on. He is biting off a very interesting challenge. And, you know, Brendan, I got to say this. You're smart to work in this area because this is going to be a very hot area. And I'm not talking virtual reality particularly, but I'm talking image recognition. If we can get machines to successfully look at something and say, I know what that is, this is going a long way towards successful robotics, autonomous vehicles, everything. And it is easier. If you know what the universe is going to look like, it's easier to do. For instance, we've got self-driving cars that do an excellent job. They use LIDAR, which is a 3D radar-like imaging system, to create an image of the world around them. We thought for a long time, for years, we thought that the prerequisite for self-driving vehicles would be an entirely new road system, right? We have to put wires in the road that tell the car where to go. And, of course, that's prohibitively expensive. You're not going to build a new interstate system just so you can have self-driving cars. Turns out, you didn't need it. Because this LIDAR is so good, it can get a 3D realistic image into the computer of what's around it at all times in real time. And the image recognition in the computer is good enough to know that's a vehicle, that's a human, that's a stop sign, that's a squirrel. It can recognize the kind of limited stuff you might see as you're driving around and operate the vehicle completely safely in that environment. Google's been doing this now for a few years. They have hundreds of thousands of accident-free miles on these autonomous vehicles at highway speeds, on, off the highway on city streets. Just it works really, really well. Now, they still have a human there. He's sitting at the wheel. He doesn't touch the wheel, but he's sitting there in case something goes wrong. And in fact, the only accident recorded with a Google self-driving car was when the human freaked out and grabbed the wheel. Had he done nothing, the car would have been fine. So we do know. So this is a perfect example of object recognition. It has to know that's a car. That car's too close. How fast is that car ahead of me going? Adjust my speed. Adjust my braking. It's really a fascinating field. And Brendan, I think you're picking a very good field to be in. Even if you're a hardware guy, understanding how the data acquisition is going to work is a very crucial part to then the software understanding it. And the technology they're using is what was once thought to be a dead end in art, what we called artificial intelligence. This was a hot button in computer science 20, 30 years ago. Artificial intelligence, making computers that can think like humans, turned out to be almost impossible. Very difficult. One of the techniques that scientists were hopeful for was called this thing called neural networks. The idea is they tried to simulate, in a way, a human brain, a learning machine, tried to make the computer a learning machine. They realized we can't program every possible situation into the computer. That's how computers work today. They're very, what we call, deterministic machines. They have to be given instructions for all possibilities. When this happens, do this. When this happens, do that. But really, if you want a self-driving car, you can't tell it everything that's going to happen. It has to be able to look, understand, and respond in a seemingly intelligent way to a variety of situations. And that's where neural networks actually turn out to perhaps be a technique that's going to work. You feed the computer a lot of situations, and it learns. It teaches itself. It, in effect, writes its own software. And it gets better and better and smarter over time. Looked like a dead end for years, but they're doing it. They're doing it. And I'm telling you, we could do self-driving cars today. We really could. Except that it scares the willies out of us. Would you get in a car and just say, okay, take me to the market? Nah. You'd be terrified. I'd be terrified. We're going to have to work our way up. Hey, Ron in North Carolina is reminding me this is Man on the Moon Day. 40, boy, talk about a long time ago, 44 years ago today. Wow, 1969, July 20th, Neil Armstrong took one small step for a man, one giant leap for mankind, and walked upon the moon 44 years ago. What have you done for me lately? It makes you wonder. What have we accomplished in those 44 years since? 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Back to the phones we go. And Aaron is next in Los Angeles. Hi, Aaron. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. How are you, Leo?
Great. How are you?
Good. I have a problem that I'm hoping you can help me solve.
All right.
So our wedding photographer lost half of our wedding photos.
Oh, fire him. Oh, it's too late.
It's too late. He's long gone. He skipped the country.
Really?
What? Yeah.
No. He skipped the country?
Yeah, he's gone. He claims that his hard drives were robbed.
Doesn't matter what he claims. Any wedding, boy, this is the job one of a wedding photographer. Don't lose the pictures.
Or back them up off-site.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. We've gone past the whole anger.
Because you ain't. Yeah, you've gone through all the stages of grief, haven't you? Okay. You're not going to restage the wedding so that you can have it. Well, at least you got half of them.
We got half of them, and what we do have is a good HD quality video. And what I'm wondering is there a good way to pull pictures from that video?
Oh yeah, but don't get your hopes up too high because HD is 1920 by 1080.
Right.
And the high-quality pictures that were lost were much higher quality.
Right. So we're not looking to, like, blow them up to the size of a poster or anything. Well, what I'm kind of looking for is just kind of good, four by sixes that I can make out of them.
Yeah. What format is the HD video in?
We have it in M4V.
You're golden. As long as you have it on a hard drive.
Right.
It's easy. A lot of different playback programs will take a snapshot. As you watch the video, you just watch. Ah, I like that. VLC is free. The VLC, the Video LAN client. It's from videoLAN.org. It's free. It'll open the file. You can play it. You know what? I wish Video LAN did, and QuickTime does. Hello?
Hello, I'm here. I got a text.
Oh, I thought it was a three-year-old going, beep, beep.
Yeah, it's a Star Trek sound from
I like it. That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. So what QuickTime will do, and if you could play it in QuickTime, that's probably an even better way, is you can go frame by frame pushing the arrow. So when you get to a part of the wedding that you like, you know, like the ceremony, you get one arrow, well, right. there's a frame. So if you have a Mac or you have a PC with QuickTime on it, that would be another way to do it. And then QuickTime will let you say, oh, snap that frame.
So there is an option, and do I need to get Absolutely. QuickTime Pro or the...
You might, but try it with QuickTime Free, see if it works. I'm so sorry. Let's talk about backup when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's horrible. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. There's no reason in the world you, my friend, you should be going to the post office. If you're running a business, who has time? When you mail stuff, you know, and this is so cool. This was mailed by Stamps.com. When you mail stuff, you should just, you know, if you're doing any shipping at all, have a printer, a computer, buy and print postage as you need it. That's what Stamps.com does. It can put your logo on the stamp. The stamp is a QR code. And by the way, the post office loves this. For one thing, you know, if you're mailing as an individual a package 13 ounces or higher, which this is, you got to take it to the post office so they can look you in the eye and see what that thing is. With Stamps.com, because of the QR code, they go, oh, we know who you are. We've got all the information. The postal carrier will pick it up. You can even schedule pickups at your convenience. So you never have to get up from the desk to buy the postage. You never have to get up from the desk to print the postage. You can mail any class of mail. In fact, Stamps.com is smart enough to even recommend what class of mail is appropriate, given the weight, the size, the contents. It'll fill out forms if you have express mail, priority mail, international mail. It fills out all the forms, prints them out. They're ready to go. The mail carrier comes. There's the package. There's the forms. You're done. Outbound mail, the shipping address, that's nice too because it comes from your address book or your QuickTime. If you sell on eBay or Etsy or PayPal or, you know, any of that, take it right from the website. Of course, your address, the return address is all out there. You can have your company logo if you want on it. The post office, you can see, loves this because it's legible. They can automate it. That's why they love Stamps.com. In fact, that's why they give Stamps.com discounts you can't even get at the post office. Stamps.com. And by the way, if you're using a postage meter, you will save so much. It's 100 times less expensive than postage meter ink. Stamps.com. I'm not going to say what I'm thinking because I don't want to slime anybody. But anybody else, don't do it. Just do Stamps.com, okay? Stamps.com. I don't know how these companies, how do companies still sell postage meters with something like Stamps.com out there? Try it right now. We got a no-risk trial offer when you visit Stamps.com. Before you do anything, you see the $80? Don't take the $80 value. Before you do anything else, click the microphone at the top of the page. Type in Tech Guy, one word, T-E-C-H-G-U-I, and then you'll get a $110 bonus offer, including the USB scale, which they've taken from me again. We actually had to get more more Stamps accounts because we kept fighting over the Stamps account. Get the scale for free. You only pay shipping and handling, but the scale's yours to keep forever in 30 days of Stamps.com, plus $55 in postage coupons you can use over the first few months. Save you some real money. Stamps.com. You're going to love it. I hate to interrupt the Beatles, but we do have a show to do here. Clang, clang, here comes Johnny Jet. He's the travel guy we love. Johnny Jet is here. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Every week at this time, Johnny takes time off from his travels around the world to join us and talk about saving money, traveling better, using technology. Hey, Johnny.
How you doing, Leo?
You're back home.
I am, as you can tell. I'm back in L.A.
Hallelujah.
Yes.
How long have you been on the road this last trip? Like weeks?
55 days.
What? 2 months?
Yes.
The plants are all dead.
No, I had someone watching after it.
Wow.
Well, 23 airlines, 10 countries.
Holy cow.
6 states.
And you thought it'd be a really great idea to be a travel writer. Are you thinking second thoughts now?
No, I love it. I'm
of course.
The luckiest man alive.
Best job in the world. I would do it in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat.
But I might have to do one more flight now that you're having a party on Wednesday that I wasn't invited to.
Oh, you're invited. Wait a minute, Lisa. We got to invite Johnny up for the party. Yeah,
because it's come up.
It's the second anniversary. Well, you've never even seen our studio. We want you to come up and see it. Yeah, we'll get you up here if you want to come up. We're bringing people up for that. And then, you know, the following Sunday is the 1,000th Tech Guy episode.
Oh, man.
I don't know what we're going to do for that.
I might have to spend a few days there.
I was thinking of getting, like, famous people who listen to this show to congratulate us on 1,000 episodes. But then I realized there aren't any famous people who listen to the show. So maybe we'll just get people like you, Johnny. Johnny's famous in certain circles. Johnny is considered the guy. If you need to know about travel, what do you want to talk about this week?
So, you know, last week we were talking about global entry, and we said we'd talk about it this week.
Yes.
So I did prepare a bunch of stuff for
that. Let's reiterate what this is. If you travel outside the U.S. a lot and you want to speed your reentry, you can ahead of time arrange with the U.S. government to have special credentials that whiz you through customs.
Here is a definition from Global Entry's site. So Global Entry is a U.S. Customs and Border Protection program that allows expedited clearance for pre-approved low-risk travelers upon arrival in the United States. It's open to U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents, Dutch citizens, South Korea citizens, Mexican nationals, and Canadian citizens and residents can enjoy it through Global Entry benefits through their Nexus program, which I'm a member of.
That's a reciprocal program that makes it easier to get into Canada as well.
So Global Entry, it costs $100. But if you have an American Express Platinum card or there's a couple other credit cards, Mercedes-Benz card, I think it is, they will refund your fee. But it's good for 5 years. So, you know, even if you only travel once a year internationally, you know, these lines sometimes at the airports, and it's really unfortunate that the U.S. – I mean, I see these pictures online. Actually, this week on Twitter, people are posting at JFK. There are 2-3 hour long lines. And this is no way to welcome U.S. visitors or U.S. citizens
horrible.
Back home.
Yeah,
it's terrible.
Horrible. Yeah.
I mean, we're supposed to be a first world country, and we can't get this right.
We treat people coming into the U.S. as criminals. It's almost the presumption is you're a terrorist unless you can prove otherwise.
It's a joke.
Yeah.
But this is one way to get around that joke, and it was the best thing I ever did. It took me a couple years to do it. I finally did it last year. I finally found time to do an interview. So what you have to do is you have to apply online.
Yep.
You schedule an interview. You go down to the airport if you do Global Entry, and you meet with them.
They actually have to have a physical eye-to-eye where they look you in the eye interview.
Oh, big time.
Yeah. No, big and that's time. The right way to do it.
But the way around it, by the way, if you want to save a little bit of money,
yeah.
And if you go to Canada, apply for the Nexus.
They're very nice there, I hear.
It's very nice. It's only $50. It's half the price,
yeah.
And it's still good for 5 years.
And does it get you into the U.S.?
You're into the U.S. as well.
Only if I'm coming from Canada?
Nope.
Oh.
So my wife applied for it, and now she has Global Entry as well. So once you have Nexus, you get Global Entry.
That's because we're NAFTA signatories, and they have a kind of a joint agreement to do that. That's great.
And there's also one for Mexico. There's 10
right.
trees same
NAFTA.
For Mexico.
Yep.
And then yesterday, the TSA began offering the pre-check program to everyone. Before, it was just for high flyers and people who were in Global Entry and Nexus. And
what's what's the pre-check program?
So the pre-check, actually, once you get Global Entry, you get a card. And on the back of the card is a number. And so what you do is you go into your, like, American Airlines account, your United account.
I've seen that. They ask for that number.
You put that number in. And then when you show up to the security for domestic flights, they will say, okay, you've been pre-approved. So you can go through this other line at certain airports, by the way. And you don't have to take your jacket off. You don't have to take your shoes off. You don't have to take your laptop out. Wow. And you don't have to take your liquids out. And you can just – I literally go through security in 30 seconds.
Wow.
And then when I land in Canada, I don't show my passport. I just scan my eyes.
That's interesting. It uses retinal scan and biometrics, a retinal scan.
This is the best travel technology there is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then – and for the U.S., they take your fingerprints. And you don't have to fill out any forms. You don't have to fill out that form. You have to do it. You do it on the computer, and it takes literally a minute, maybe a minute and a half.
Now, the thing that stopped me, because I when I went to Canada every month, I was going to do this, is that it was hard to make the appointment. You have to make an appointment at an airport to be pre-interviewed by security officials, and I also was a little nervous about that. I felt like I might start sweating, and they'd think I was a bad guy. How hard was that interview?
It's easy as can be, but you know, I went down to the one, since you do the Nexus, I did the Nexus, so you had to go to one in Canada, and it's usually by the airport, or I did it by Niagara Falls. And I went in there, you have to meet 15 minutes with the U.S. one and 15 minutes with a Canadian agent, and they're pretty tough. The U.S. one was tougher.
Do they ask, like, do they ask outright, are you a terrorist?
No, but they go, why have you been to so many countries?
How come you travel so much? Are you meeting with Al-Qaeda representatives?
Yeah, they're like, why have you been to Israel? Why have you been to Abu Dhabi or UAE? Why have you been to Oman?
Right.
And, you know.
You know,
once I told them what I did for a living, they're like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm a travel writer. I would just say, I'm a disc jockey. And they'd say, you're never leaving the country again, let alone getting back in. And if you
listen, you're going away. You go away at least once a year.
I travel a lot. In fact, I just had to get more pages in my passport.
Okay.
So yeah, I actually had to send in my passport, and they said, well, you want 24 new pages or 48? I opted for 24. I only have a couple of years left.
And you told me you have the American Express Platinum card.
And so I do. I could do this.
It's free.
Oh, Johnny Jet. Okay, where do you go? What's the website?
Okay, globalentry.gov. I'll tweet it out. I actually wrote a story on it, so I'll tweet the whole story.
Good.
But it's globalentry.gov.
And, of course, if you just go to johnnyjet.com, all of this will be explicated for you in easy-to-understand English. Johnny Jet, the travel insider. What? Yes, plug time.
It's right there on my website.
Yes, what is
it? This way we're having two tickets on Hawaiian Air and four nights at the Grand Wailea contest.
Wow. And how do I enter that contest?
Just click it, and then there's a little box, and you put in – you got to subscribe to the newsletter. And if you follow me on Twitter or Facebook or Hawaiian or Grand Wailea, you get extra entries.
At Johnny Jet on Twitter and johnnyjet.com, and he's on you're on Google Plus now, and you're on Instagram finally, which is great. And
finally.
Putting up all those beautiful images.
And now you need to get on Global Entry.
And okay, that seems fair. Thank you, Johnny. JohnnyJet.com. All right. Have a great enjoy being home for the first time in 55 days. Can you believe that?
Well, I might have to come up to San Francisco now.
Well, we'll let you know. Yeah, we'll get in touch.
All right.
Thank you, Johnny.
Take care.
Take care. JohnnyJet.com at JohnnyJet. I love it. It makes me want to travel every time I talk to Johnny, except 55 days on the road. Wow.
Wow.
888-888 Ask Leo's the number. Can you believe that? A wedding photographer who lost half the images and then skipped the country rather than face the bridezilla. I mean, that's just horrible. I do recommend, and I've mentioned it before, my good friend Peter Krog is a great photographer, done many a wedding, among other things, I'm sure. And he got together with the Association of Professional Photographers and did a website for photographers about workflow. And actually, it was done in conjunction with the Library of Congress. dpbestflow.org. DP as in digital photography. Bestflow as in the best workflow.org. dpbestflow.org. And it's all about best practices for photographers, for digital photographers, so that they don't lose their pictures. It's from the American Society of Media Photographers with support from the Accredited Professional Photographer Association. Really cool stuff. And if you're a photographer, please read this stuff so you don't lose the pictures of a wedding. But everybody can get a little bit out of this, including in the best practices section, the backup section. Do read that. How to backup. What backup is, primary versus backups, the 3-2-1 rule, which I talk about all the time. You really ought, if you're a professional photographer selling images, nobody's going to stage the wedding again. You really ought to read this stuff and understand all the risks and the ways to mitigate those risks. And anybody who has data on a computer that they don't want to lose, you got to read this stuff. You got to read this. dpbestflow.org. It's a really good site. We'll put a link in the show notes. TechGuyLabs.com. Randy, Richmond, Virginia. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
I listen to almost all your shows on podcast, and I usually listen in the car.
Thank you.
So my car doc is really important to me. I haven't heard you discuss this feature before. Currently, I'm using a Droid 3, which is almost perfect, and it routes all the phone audio into my car speakers, including phone calls. The screen's a little small, so because you like them, I got a Galaxy S4 and a car dock and put it in, and it notes in there that it will not pass telephone audio into the speakers.
Huh.
So I called the iBolt, the manufacturer of the car dock, and they said the HTC One is the same way. Hmm. So I was wondering if anybody knows, is there a big screen phone that will pass all the audio without Bluetooth?
Through the USB port.
It's through a USB and an aux jack.
That's interesting that they've taken those features out. I think it's because most people, I do this certainly, use the Bluetooth.
My cars aren't new enough to have Bluetooth.
Right. It's nice to have that hardware, too. It's probably more reliable. That's interesting. I don't know what the technology would be, the name of the technology would be that you'd look for.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key. If we could figure out what that name is, the ability to have hardware connection, do the Bluetooth, or the equivalent of a Bluetooth handset, in other words, the audio from the phone. Is the phone the microphone on this? There's not a microphone in the dock. In other words, when you speak, you're speaking into the phone.
Yes. Yes.
Huh. Yeah, I'm actually not familiar with this technology. So the dock is a USB dock, connects via the USB cable, right?
It actually connects via aux. It's a USB cable for the charger. So
So the audio out is just through the headphone jack.
It goes through one wire that's embedded into the car dock. You just drop the phone into the car dock, and that one wire splits, and one wire.
Does the audio jack on the phone, is that used at all?
No.
No. So, well, it must be all coming through the USB port. I can't, I don't know, understand any other way that it could get the audio from the phone.
The output of the wire has two outputs. One goes into the USB for a charger, and the other one goes into the aux plug
on
the audio system.
I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to understand how it's getting the audio out of the phone.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. It doesn't have a microphone in it. It must be coming through the USB port. And so I think that's what's missing in the HTC One and the Galaxy S4 is this ability to get the audio through the USB port.
Yes.
And you don't have Bluetooth, so you can't get the audio that way. You probably could use the audio jack.
I have found you could use the headphone, the audio jack.
The headphone jack, yeah.
And then you got an extra wire running out.
Yeah, it's not as desirable.
No.
Boy, that's interesting. I would guess that the reason that the more modern phones don't support it is just that they expect people to have that capability.
Well, I wonder, too, is that a Motorola thing or a Samsung thing or hardware or software? I can't figure it out. So I went back to the Droid S3 or the Droid 3.
Yeah.
Just because it works so well.
Yeah. And I would bet you new phones just don't include that feature. So it's audio over USB. I think it has to be. Unless there's, a microphone in the dock. And is the dock is the dock from a third party or is it from Motorola?
It's from Motorola.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I think everybody just uses Bluetooth now. I really don't know why it's no longer included, but I would guess it was something that Motorola did. And I'm not familiar with it. I'm looking at maybe it's an Android. I'm just looking at some articles about this thing. Nobody in the chat room seems to even know. So, you don't want to. It's kind of starting to be a little bit of a Rube Goldberg device if you have an audio cable coming out of the headphone jack and the USB's charging. But I think that's the only way to do it. I'm not familiar with how this is done. I'll have to do some research. I'll tell you what, keep listening. I'll do some research. And what Randy's really looking for is a more modern phone that supports this. Let's look and we'll see. And Randy, just take your answer on the air because I'm just going to have to do some research for this. Now let's say hi to Neil in Sherman Oaks, California. Hi, Neil. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yes, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm well. We actually, somebody in the chat room, Bert, is pointing us to an article which we'll put in our show notes at Tech Guy Labs. Enable USB audio on any Android 4 smartphone or tablet. So I guess it's something built into Android, the ability to do that. And with certain, it's USB class audio is what it is. USB class audio is a USB audio feature. All right. So I'll put this in the show notes. And it points to an application which you can install on your Android that will turn it on. So maybe you can use it, and I'll try it on your on your HTC One. Hey, what can I do for you?
Yes, hi. I just got a new Xperia, Sony Xperia. And I wonder what you know about the phone itself. I've only had it for 4 days, but I really enjoy it.
Yeah, I want to hear your impressions. I tell you what, we have to take a break. Hang on. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK. Leo, that's the phone number. If you have a question, a comment, or suggestion. Our caller, second to last caller of the hour before, was trying to get an iBolt dock to work with a more modern Android phone. He's using a Droid right now. And he says that he's heard the Galaxy S4 and HTC One, the two most hotly sought after Android phones right now, don't work with the audio on the iBolt dock. And apparently they do. It's really a software issue, a driver issue. Our own Dr. Mom in the chat room uses a Galaxy S4 with that dock and says it works fine. So it's really a device driver issue. These things are like computers now, aren't they? And they are computers for every intent and purpose. Neil has a very nice one. He has a Sony Xperia. Hi, Neil. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, that's all right.
So which Xperia do you have?
The brand new one, the Xperia Z.
The Zed. Oh, it's beautiful, yeah. Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, I just got it 4 days ago. The first one to get it. I was actually upgrading to an HTC One, and then I saw the Xperia, and I changed my mind and got that instead.
Yeah, it's very thin. It's beautiful. How big is the screen? Is it 4.5 inches?
Five inches.
So it's bigger than the HTC One. In screen size. Now, one thing I've heard, and I don't have it. I've been thinking of getting one, so I'm actually thrilled you called. One thing I've heard people complain about is the Sony software on there. Do you feel like it's a good Android experience?
Yeah, actually, I do. It is very fast, and the camera is unbelievable. It's like HD. It's so crisp and clear.
Yeah. What was your phone? Yeah, what was your phone prior to this?
Well, I've used everything, but I was using PDH, whatever, BlackBerry, but I the last phone I used that I traded in for this was an LG 9, Optima 9, which was great, which is small.
You also very nice phone. Well, I think that Sony doesn't get as much attention as it should for this phone. I think a lot of people are, like you, singing its praises, so I'm going to have to go out and get one. I haven't tried it.
I'm still learning. I still have to do my settings, which I haven't figured out how to do the part yet. Right now things are running all the time, and it's using the battery very fast. But that's my fault because I haven't done the power saving settings and all that I'm supposed to do.
And this is, the universal experience now with Android phones is you've really got to tweak them to make sure you get decent power. Does this have does not have a removable battery?
No, it does not. The battery is right inside.
Yeah.
And it is waterproof, as they advertise, and it's scratch resistant.
That's what I'm intrigued by, because I'd like to take this swimming with me. maybe that's not such a good idea. Yeah, quad-core processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 5-inch screen. Very impressive. We'll have to add that to our list of the top Android phones right now. It is running the latest version of Android as well, 4.2. So
it has wonderful sound also.
Yeah. Now, that's one thing I like about the HTC One with its front-facing speakers and the Beats sound. The sound is excellent on this. But you'd figure Sony would have decent sound. They, in fact, make, as far as I know, they make the sensors, the camera sensors for the iPhone and probably for most of these other phones as well. So no surprise that they have a good camera in this. 13 megapixels.
Well, overall, I'm happy with it so far. So I just wondered what you thought about it. So, and I can say stamps.com is a good thing also because for your recommendation, we've done that. We've gotten rid of our, I won't name the company, but their machine.
Awesome. Yeah, the postage meter is terrible. Hey, thank you for the recommendation, Neil. I kick myself because I really feel like I had to try this. And then there's one other kind of phone that is also very also ran. And if you get one of these, then you're really going to be one of the people in the know. It's from a company called Oppo, which we've recommended as a Blu-ray manufacturer, OPPO, and they have a phone called the Find 5. It's 5 inches also. 1080p. It is gorgeous looking. 13 megapixel camera. It seems to have specs very similar, in fact, to the Sony Xperia Z. $500. I'm sorry, for the 16 gig in white. $569 for the 32 gig in black. I might have to pick one of these up just to complete my set. Same camera, probably same screen. It looks a lot like the Xperia Z, actually. I do like removable batteries, I talk about this sometimes. I carry around extra Samsung batteries for my Galaxy S4. I have a bunch of them, so if I go out, and I'm not anywhere I can plug in, I can go a couple of days without plugging in. And a number of people say, well, you don't need to do that with most phones. You can just carry those portable battery packs around, which I have a plenitude of as well, and just charge the phone as you go. We live in exciting times. This is a very good time to be interested in smartphones. This is where all the interesting stuff is happening. It's not happening in the PC world, is it? And you might say that the tablet world, but I'm wondering, I notice interest in the iPad waning. Everybody who wanted one has one, and Apple hasn't released a new one in a while. We just saw that Microsoft, they released their quarterly results, and they said, we're going to take a $900 million loss on the Surface RT, our tablet. That's a big admission. It's so quickly, too, on just less than a year into the life cycle of the Surface RT. It came out, in September or October? Almost $1 billion loss. They're just writing it down. Makes you wonder what the future of Windows RT is. I think I've said the right thing. We've had callers in the last couple of weeks call and say, should I get an RT? And I'm almost always, especially now that they've dropped the price to $350, that's, by the way, why they're taking the loss. It's actually below cost. And I'm still trying to, I generally say, don't get it. Even at $350, yeah, it comes with Microsoft Office. That might make it a good deal, but it feels to me like a dead end, especially now that Microsoft's saying, yeah, we're going to take a loss on this thing. They're writing it off. 8888 to Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion on any of the topics we cover on the show. Our website is techguylabs.com. That's where you can go to get answers to the questions that you've heard on the show or links to places I've mentioned. You can also add your own comments. I know some of you, a lot of you perhaps, sit there yelling at me. No, Leo, there's a better way. I oughta. Well, you don't have to suffer in frustration. You can actually go to techguylabs.com. We put the questions up as we go. Actually, it'll be a little late today because James DeRuvo is at Comic-Con in San Diego. He's dressed up as a Furby. I don't know. They do that, though. They go to Comic-Con and they dress up in the costume of their favorite character, right? What would you be, Heather, if you were going to a Comic-Con? What would you dress up as? Wonder Woman, perhaps?
Oh, she's great. Yeah, I'll do that.
She's pretty good.
Wonder Woman. with cuffs.
I don't know what James dressed up as. We'll have to ask him. But anyway, so our show notes will be a little late today, but we will get them up very quickly. And what we do after the fact is we add audio and video from the show. So if you missed the show, it's all there, techguylabs.com. And it's divided up by question and answer. So you can go directly to a question, listen to or watch the question, my answer, and then add your own comments to that. So if you've got a better idea, please Get on over there. TechGuyLabs.com. It'll also give you a link to the other place people yell at me, the chat room. these are the kids in the back of the class who are just wiseacres. The wiseacre. You Weisenheimers, you knock it off back there. 8888-ASK-LEO, TechGuyLabs.com. Give us a ring. Give us a jingle. Visit the website, and I'll get back to the phones to take more of your calls right after these important words. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And you know what I'm going to use to get the files to the radio station? Share file, of course. How many of you said share file? Those of you who listen a lot know I'm a big share file fan. It's from Citrix. Love Citrix. They created, they knew that in business, and this is what they do, they do software to support business, that sharing files is really an issue because, and you've heard me say it, you cannot send attachments. That's just insecure. You know, there's bounce backs and there's this whole issue of viruses. You really want to train employees, you want to train staff not to open email attachments. So sending files in business via attachments is the wrong way to do it. ShareFile is awesome. You have the ShareFile Sync program, which will automatically synchronize your ShareFile folders to the cloud, so you always have access to them. Let me just show you mine here. And so I have the two ShareFile folders. You see I have KFI and I have Premiere. So I share stuff with the radio station KFI and with the Premiere network in general. Anything I put in these folders is automatically synchronized. But and what I also can do is I can go to my ShareFile account and I can say share this file. I can do it on my smartphone, my tablet, my desktop. And what you do is instead of, it looks like email. You can even have it send an email. But what they're getting instead is a secure link. Which is awesome. That secure link means that I can keep track of who opens it. I can control who opens it for how long. They have a customization for pretty much every business, so that's a nice thing too. And if you're a medical business, for instance, sharing patient records, it is fully HIPAA compliant with regulations in almost every industry. Why don't you try it free for 30 days? Visit ShareFile.com. Click the button at the top of the page that says Radio Listeners. Click here. It's a microphone up there. Use our offer code TechGuy. Big fan. Use it all the time, and I recommend you use it too. ShareFile.com. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number if you have a question, a comment, a suggestion. Bruce is next in Hesperia, California. Hi, Bruce. Leo Laporte here.
Hey, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. It's a pleasure to speak with you today.
Thanks. Pleasure to speak to you.
I'm a second-time caller, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about my new build, my Windows 8 build that I just put together.
Okay.
I had a Pentium 4 machine, and it bit the dust about a year and a half ago, and I was using a Celeron hand-me-down processor, and I was just really having a problem taking 30 seconds to 3 minutes to be able to go to a web page.
Oy.
It
Oy.
Was horrible.
Yeah.
So I felt the need for speed.
Yeah, you know, 33 minutes to go to a web page will give you that.
Yeah. And so
sudden craving.
Day before Father's Day, my wife told me, she says, just order the thing. I've been checking out this build for probably about 3 weeks.
Hovering your finger over the buy button, huh?
Exactly.
What'd you get?
I did a custom build. I got the Haswell processor, i7 4770.
Good.
The Asus motherboard, it's the Z87 Pro.
Good, very nice. Yeah,
that's a 256 gig SSD hard drive.
Oh, have you got it yet?
Oh, yeah, I've built it, I put it all together, it's all running.
Is it like the fastest thing you ever saw in your life?
Oh, it's incredible. And to top it off, I put a RAM drive on it, on the SSD drive. Yeah, you got 16 gig of memory, so I carved out 4 gig. And I put Office on that, and I kid you not, Office 2013, it starts in about a second and a half.
Yeah. Well, I haven't heard of RAM drives in some time.
Yeah.
I guess if you have enough memory, you know, certainly the fastest drive. And I think people underestimate how important disk I/O or input/output is, because you can get a fast processor, but if it's waiting for a hard drive, it doesn't feel like a fast machine. That's why SSDs. Solid-state flash drives are very popular right now.
Yeah, there's a website out there that has a comparison of speed performance, just raw disk I/O.
Right.
platter drives versus SSDs versus RAM drives.
Well, RAM drives will always be the fastest possible, but it uses system memory. How much memory do you have?
Well, I put 16 gig in it.
Okay, and use 8 of it for the RAM drive or something like that?
Actually, I put 4 in there because it's the freeware version I got is limited to 4.
4 is fine. That's a lot of space, and you still have 12 left over for the operating system and applications. That's fine. And
yeah,
there are two kinds of SSDs. There's a solid-state drive, probably the kind you have, that is on the SATA bus, just as you would connect a regular hard drive. And that the throughput of the SSD is actually faster than the SATA bus can handle. The SATA bus, even the most modern, tops out at 6 gigabits per second. So there is another kind of SSD that we're starting to see, and Apple's going to use in its new Mac Pro. They put it on the PCI Express bus, which is considerably faster. If you have enough channels, you can actually get much faster performance. But still, it's not going to be as fast as a RAM drive. I just haven't heard of anybody using a RAM drive in a long time. I'm interested to hear that that's still around.
Yeah, I think it's starting to make a comeback.
Well, actually, RAM is so cheap, and people do have a lot more RAM than they need. Now, how does it – it just keeps Office in the RAM drive?
Yeah, I installed Office. I called it my R drive.
Right.
And I installed Office into that.
So it's some sort of battery backup solution, or do you have to keep the computer on all the time?
It actually saves it on shutdown.
So shutdown's a little slower because it has to save it out and load it up again.
Yeah, and it loads it up. Or you can turn on a periodic save, but it does not do an incremental save.
Okay.
There are some out there that do incremental saves. But
yeah, you don't need to do that because you don't want to put data on that RAM drive, just the application.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've got a terabyte drive for the data.
Great.
And so
sounds very nice. I commend you. It sounds like you put some love and effort into it, and it sounds like you've got a great machine, about as fast as you can get today.
Yeah, it's the one thing that's slow is the video processor. I did not buy a GPU for it. I'm just running it off the system board.
Is it Iris? So Haswell has a couple of different ways to go from Intel using the Intel. You could have the HD 5000, or you can have the newer, rather faster Iris, which I think is pretty good for motherboard video.
I think it's the 5000.
Yeah, I think that's adequate. And you know what? If you next Father's Day,
yeah, or Christmas,
for Christmas, you could always put a video card in there.
Right, and that's my plan is to eventually just keep adding.
Unless you're a gamer or you're doing video rendering, there are very few things that you really need that high, or Bitcoin mining. There are very few things that you really need that super fast GPU for.
Yeah. The only issues I have with this is that I haven't been able to get my Logitech webcam to work. And I put two Blu-ray players in there, a burner and a player, and I'm looking for some software to drive those things.
I don't know. So they don't have Windows 8 drivers on your camera?
They say they do. Logitech says they do, but I downloaded it. I've uninstalled it. I've reinstalled it.
It's on the USB port?
Yeah.
Huh. I don't know why that would be.
I've tried different USB ports.
I don't know why that would be. The Blu-ray is another matter entirely, because one of the big issues with Blu-ray, of course, is copy protection.
Right.
And it's one of the reasons Steve Jobs called Blu-ray a bag of hurt, and Apple has never offered Blu-ray on its Apple hardware, because you have to then implement DRM, digital rights management, because the movie companies won't let you do it otherwise.
Well, as a matter of fact, I downloaded a Blu-ray player software program, and it told me I couldn't play one of my Blu-ray discs because of that very reason.
Yeah, so it has to be supported throughout the system. I'm sure Windows 8 does support it, but it may be non-trivial getting it working with the third-party drives. I'm not sure.
I don't think it liked the DVI connection to the
right.
monitor. I think
that's probably it. So one of the requirements is you have HDCP support across all of the devices, the playback device, the screen, even the cable.
Right.
And so if everything is in HD and DVI is not HDCP compliant, you need to get an HDMI connection.
Yeah, so I thought I'd maybe go that route eventually.
Sure, when you get the video card, it'll be easy.
Exactly.
Another excuse to get the better video card.
You got it.
Hey, it sounds good to me. It sounds like you're doing a great job. I'm not sure what the Logitech issue is. That should not be the case. Maybe there's, I don't know. Maybe it's the USB, and I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. Maybe somebody in the chat room will have a suggestion or put it on the show notes. I'll keep my ear to the ground for you. But that's fun. Now, I want to just say I don't recommend building your own computer. You do not save money. What you get is what Bruce got, which was the ability to make it just exactly what he wanted in every respect. But you're already seeing one of the drawbacks is not all the hardware necessarily will work. And who are you going to call? If it were a Dell system with the same specs and the Logitech camera didn't work, you'd just say, hey, Dell, and they'd have to fix it. If it's you, you've got to fix it. And so I'm not sure why. Same thing with integrating Blu-ray. In fact, if you want a Blu-ray player, I'd strongly recommend buying an all, a system. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I think a lot of people who listen to the show build their own computers. And certainly for years, I've made videos, that have been sold in stores, how to build your own computer. For years, I recommended it. It's just that you're not going to save money, and there are issues, and it's just not something to take lightly. It's sure a lot of fun, but your hobby is now computer builder, right? So some people, their hobby is what I can do with a computer. That's cool. Same thing happened with stereo equipment. I'm of an age that I remember when people put their own stereos together, and they were boasting about how great the guns on the 1812 Overture sounded, and it was all about the process of assembling, building, putting this thing together. It wasn't so much about listening to music. That was almost incidental. But then it became, commoditized. It was easy to buy a complete stereo system. You didn't have to put a lot of energy into it. And people started paying more attention to the music, more attention to the content. And the same thing's happened with computers. In 20 years ago, building your own computer was a rite of passage. You needed to do that. And, people would compare specs and stuff. Now it's a hobby thing. If most people use computers to do something, to get things done, they're much more interested in how do I use Facebook or, than how do I, what processor should I choose? And I have to say, it's fun, but it's risky as well, because if the thing doesn't work, you are the first and last line of defense. My friends at PC Perspective put a very good what they call a hardware leaderboard together, PCPER.com. And there's a tab right at the top of the page, hardware leaderboard. This is a hardware enthusiast site where they review motherboards and processors and, hard drives and stuff. So their hardware leaderboard is actually really great for anybody who does want to build a computer or at least wants to think about what would I put in a computer? That's half the fun of it. They have four systems, a low-end, mid-range, high-end, and dream system. The low-end is $455. The dream system is $3,200. So you can just see where the systems lie, what you would put in. And maybe you already have a system and you're just thinking about it. What's the best video card? You can look at that as well. PCPER.com. Pi in our chat room says, I build my own computer so I can choose high-quality parts. I'm not sure you get different parts, to be honest. If Dell, of course, is making its own kind of custom stuff and so forth, you're certainly not going to get a better price on a 1Z, 2Z part than Dell is going to get on 20,000 of the same part. But a lot of motherboards on computers are maybe not the best. It just depends where you go. It's certainly the case that a lot of the consumer computers, the price pressure is so great that they use substandard parts. So maybe the time is coming as the quality of computers drops, as prices drop, maybe the time is coming to go back to building our own. I don't know. That's possible. I think I probably would build my own if I were gonna get a new PC today. The problem is I buy laptops. You can't build your own laptop. You really can't. You did? You built your own laptop? No. It's not worth it. Believe me. That I would not recommend. Christy in Irvine, California. You're next. Hi, Christy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Christy. What can I do for you?
Well, you're kind of going in the right direction as far as my questions anyway. But,
good.
I'm in the market for a new laptop. My computer is, I think, about 7 years old, maybe 6.5 or so. and I have a Pentium, probably 4, maybe 5 processor,
yeah,
Vista operating system.
Good time to get a new computer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't know. I haven't looked at anything, and I kind of don't know exactly what I should be looking at other than probably an i7. And I know it's going to be Windows 8, which I'm not familiar with really at all.
Here's the interesting thing. Our last caller did put, you know, all high-end components in. I didn't ask him what he's doing. He may well have overbought. Most people don't need, for instance, an i7.
Okay.
An i5 for 90% of computing is just fine. The i7, the big difference between the i7 and the i5, these are the Intel, current Intel chips, is hyper-threading, the ability to do more things at a at once, and there's more cache in the i7. It's not a huge difference. You would be better taking that money and putting it into a bigger screen or a second screen or, you know, things that would be more usable for you. But again, it all comes down to what do you do? I mean, are you talking about video editing? Then you need an i7. What are you doing?
Well, currently I'm just daily user, you know, online. I use Microsoft Office.
Okay.
I'm kind of in the health industry, and I'm wanting to set up my own website in the somewhat not too distant future.
Is there any specialized software that you use in your business, or is it all just kind of, you know, Office and things like that?
Currently, I just use Office, and I'm actually just kind of breaking into this direction. So
i5 is fine for you then.
Okay.
No reason to spend more money in that. In fact, are you going to get a desktop or a laptop, Christy?
A laptop.
Okay. One thing you might consider is to take some of the money that you would have spent on a higher processor and get a external screen that you can dock when you get home with your laptop so that you have a large screen. The improvement in productivity with a large screen is immense.
Okay. So
just that's the kind of thinking I'm just trying to, I'm saying that as an example of the kind of thinking you should be doing.
Is,
you know, you've got a certain amount of money you're going to spend. Spend it in an area that will benefit you. Spending it on an i7 is not. Now, getting, if it's a laptop, definitely you want the fourth generation Intel processor. Because the battery life is about 50% better on that.
Now, how do I tell that it's fourth generation?
It'll say, you know, it'll be part of the spec. It's it's what we call the Haswell chips. They just came out in June, so it'll be a newer model. You won't find it at a Costco or a Sam's Club. The box stores sell late older models that the companies are trying to move.
Okay.
A laptop, okay, that's good. I would recommend a solid-state drive, for instance. That's where you'd be better off spending the money than an i7. That's a solid-state drive is a drive that doesn't spin. It's no moving parts. It's just like the flash memory in your camera. But it is immensely faster.
Okay, and will it also state that in the spec?
It will. Okay. It will. So you're looking for fourth-generation Intel processor. You're looking for SSD, solid-state drive. And one thing you'll note on solid-state drives, they tend to be smaller. You know, you'll be able to get a terabyte or 2 terabyte spinning drive, but you'll be down to a 256 gig solid-state drive. But for what you're doing, you don't need a huge amount of storage.
Okay.
256 gigs is an awful lot. I would get 8 gigs of RAM.
Okay.
A lot of these systems, especially at the box stores, are 4 gigabytes of RAM. I think 8 gigabytes is better for you.
Okay.
In other words, this is where I'd spend the money, not on the i7. Let's see. I think, you should consider portability. You said Windows 8. Strongly recommend that you get a touch screen.
Okay.
Windows 8 really likes a touch screen.
So you think Windows 8 is going to be hanging around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you're stuck with it.
Okay.
You could get a Windows 7 machine, but it's just silly at this point to buy a 5-year-old operating system. You should get the new operating system. There are issues in usability, but you'll get used to them. Microsoft's going to fix many of them with version 8.1, which will be a free upgrade in a month or two. You want Windows 8, and you want touch. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And that belch signals it's time for Dickie D, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and the Giz Whiz. He joins us every week with a gadget or two for your perusal. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, how you doing, pal? You
staying cool? I hear it's pretty warm out in your neck of the woods.
It is just so. We are praying for this impending storm.
Yeah, yeah.
And I just hope it comes quick.
I hope it comes gently as well, because we have some bad history out there.
True.
Is it about a year since? When did Sandy hit?
Sandy was October 30th.
October. Okay, so.
Yeah.
Not a year yet. So, Dickie D, what do you got for us today?
Well, you know, I'm just doing, you'll see these on ABC next week, but you'll hear about them here first. A couple of quick and cheap and kind of clever ways to keep cool, which makes sense.
I bought, I just want you to know, that humidifier that you put on the top of a water bottle.
Yes.
I love that. I haven't had occasion to use it yet because it's pretty humid here. But if it ever dries out, I'm ready.
Oh, okay.
Actually,
okay.
I got it for trips to Vegas.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's so dry in the desert.
Exactly. And this would be good for Vegas. I bought it on Amazon for $10. It's from a company called O2 Cool.
O2 Cool.
They make those spray bottles with the little fans on them that you see everybody carrying around. Well, they have a water bottle they call Sip and Mist. So sip.
Do those two things really go together?
Yes, Leo. It's a clever idea.
Sounds like a spit take.
It's a regular water bottle that you pull up the little a tit thing to get water from.
Yeah.
But built into the side is a little button to do misting from the same water you're drinking from. So there's a little straw that runs down to the bottom of the bottle so that you can spritz yourself. They should have called it drink and spritz.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I'll demonstrate. What we need something that you could surprise me with.
Okay.
Hey, did you see my wife last night?
Oh, she went out with Ozzy to the.
That's a drink and spit.
That's a drink and spit.
Probably should not have done that so close to the studio equipment, however.
Yeah, that's why I'm not demonstrating Sip and Mist on my computer. So Sip and Mist on Amazon is $10.
Yeah.
And then another clever idea is Citrus Zinger. And they're at zinganything.com. So Citrus Zinger, another water bottle with a difference. You unscrew the bottom. And there's a little thing down at the bottom that you can squeeze.
Why is it everything you do sounds filthy? You unscrew the bottom and there's a little thing down there. What are you talking about?
Well, there it is. Yeah,
I'm looking at it on the website, zinganything.com. It looks like a thermos bottle. You know, like one of those sippy cups. You know, that you carry the coffee in. But then there's something on the bottom of it. What is
on
that?
On the bottom. It's so you put in a half a lemon, half a lime, a piece of grapefruit. Then you push down on it so the juice squeezes. Then this screws to the bottom of your water bottle. There is a filter in there so that the lime or lemon flavors your water, but the little pieces don't float up into the water. So it's a clever way to make your own citrus fruit drink on the run. And it has a little cap.
It's an infuser.
It's an infuser. Exactly.
Well, that's kind of neat, actually.
Yeah, exactly. And you know if...
What do you put in there? What kind of stuff do you put...
I've been using lime and scotch. I have not noticed the heat at all.
Scotch pips in your drink.
Yes, exactly. The only reason I know it's hot here is falling down face down on the sidewalk.
And it just cooked one side of my face there.
Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly.
Wow.
And Citrus Zinger is about $17.
Very cool. Very cool.
Yeah.
At zinganything.com. Exactly. I like it. You are getting refreshing with me.
I'm gonna slap you if you do that anymore.
Dick DiBartolo is at gizwiz.biz. That's his website. Believe it or not, that's the actual name, gizwiz.biz. And when you're there, you can, of course, see notes for all the products he talks about. He's going to do this on ABC's,
World News Now.
The middle of the night news show.
Exactly.
So you can see all of that. And then you can also play the What the Heck Is It game. Click that link on the webpage to see a close-up picture of a gadget. If you could figure out what it is, you stand to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. Even if you can't, there's actually more Mad Magazines for people who get it wrong. That's gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, sir.
And stick around. The Giz Fizz is coming up on the Twit Network after the radio show. We're running out of time. Maybe we have time for one more call. Let's see. I'll get Jason on the line from Southern Arkansas. Hi, Jason. Leo
LaPorte. Hello, Leo.
Hey, Jason.
I've got a big problem. I'm the guy that everyone comes to, family and friends and whatnot, to fix software problems with their computers.
Yes, well, you're the tech guy.
Yeah. A lot of people are starting to get Windows 8, and even though I don't really like it, I went out the other day and got a computer, an expensive one.
You know, Microsoft, I think, made some bad choices, but this is the version of Windows that's the current version, and you got to use it.
Yep. Well, I broke it.
You broke it?
I broke Windows 8. I got the computer, did what I normally do, and took all the garbage that the company puts on it off. Did my restore disk.
So you're trying to get back to a plain vanilla Windows 8.
Well, kind of.
Yeah. Get rid of all the junk.
All the ads.
Yeah. I don't blame you. So what stopped working? How did you kill it?
Well, I used the Windows transfer file and whatnot transfer to transfer a few programs over that I use, and passwords and things like that over.
Right.
Rebooted the computer. It will reboot into my sign-in screen. I sign in, and I get a blank screen.
Hmm.
I can't scroll to the corners to bring down any of the...
Yeah, you know what? Before the good news is you haven't done anything with it. And what's nice, Windows 8 does have this automatic recovery. You can reboot into recovery mode, reinstall Windows 8, go back to scratch. I don't know what you did wrong, but I would guess that the transferring stuff using the transfer wizard was the mistake. I don't recommend that. If you have programs you need, reinstall them. If you have data you need, copy it and move it over, you know, by copying it off of a USB drive. The backup wizards, to me, the risk of copying something over that does exactly this is too great. But since nothing more has been done, you know, you don't have any, you haven't been using it, it's easy. And this is one of the things they did right with Windows 8. It's very easy to restore it, basically do a clean install. It's built into Windows 8. So I go ahead and do that and start over, and then just don't use that transfer wizard. You know, I hate recommending Windows 8, but you have to. If you're going to use Windows, you've got to use the new version. That's just the way it is. Good news is Microsoft does have an update 8.1 coming out in 2 months that will fix a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of the people, the negativity people have been experiencing with Windows 8. If you're going to use Windows, you got to use the current version, I think. Leo LaPorte, the tech guy, thanks for joining me. Have a great Geek Week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo LaPorte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows and Windows Weekly, Macintosh and MacBreak Weekly, iPad and iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.